Welcome to Walking Between the Worlds with Al Mean. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Al Mean.
Welcome to Walking Between the Worlds. We are today going to be discussing self-love, the foundation of all relationship. Every other week, we explore our love for self, our relationship with self, as well as with others. And then in between, we explore our relationship with the divine. Today, we will explore the different facets of having a relationship with oneself, self-knowledge, self-acceptance, self-regard, and self-love. Becoming aware of the vital role that our sub-personalities play in this is very important. They either hinder or help in relationship with others, and we will take a look at that as well. I would like to read for you from The Prophet, that is written by Khalil Gibran, an ancient Lebanese philosopher and poet. And the piece I wish to read is on self-knowledge. You see, we cannot progress to self-love unless we first know ourselves. We profess to love others almost immediately, but then too can truly be loved when we know what it is we're loving. And a man said, "Speak to us of self-knowledge." And he answered, saying, "Your hearts know in silence the secrets of the days and the nights, but your ears thirst for the sound of your heart's knowledge. You would know in words that which you have always known in thought. You would touch with your fingers the naked body of your dreams, and it is well you should. The hidden wellspring of your soul must needs rise and run murmuring to the sea, and the treasure of your infinite depths would be revealed to your eyes. But let there be no scales to weigh your unknown treasure, and seek not the depths of your knowledge with staff or sounding line, for self is a sea boundless and measureless. Say not, 'I have found the truth,' but rather, 'I have found a truth.' Say not, 'I have found the path of the soul.' Say rather, 'I have met the soul walking upon my path.' For the soul walks upon all paths. The soul walks not upon a line, neither does it grow like a reed. The soul unfolds itself like a lotus of countless petals." What he is indicating is that the knowledge of self is never-ending. The knowledge of another, therefore, is never-ending as well. For each of us is a being as vast as the cosmos, having a human experience. And the discovery, the journey of relationship, is never-ending indeed. There is an aversion to much of our bodies very frequently placed there by elders or teachers that makes us ashamed of various portions of our own body that we would find not so in another. Then again, I read from Leaves of Grass by Walt Whitman, and this is his poem on the self, and it is the most beautiful piece of poetry I have ever read on self-love. I went to a great deal of trouble to find this to share it with my listeners. It stirs me deeply. "I believe in the flesh and the appetites. Seeing, hearing, feeling are miracles, and each part and tag of me is a miracle. Divine am I inside and out, and I make holy whatever I touch or am touched from. The scent of these armpits, aroma finer than prayer. This head, more than churches, Bibles, and all the creeds. If I worship one thing more than another. It shall be the spread of my body or any part of it. Translucent mold of me, it shall be you. Shaded ledges and rests, it shall be you. Firm masculine coulter, it shall be you. Whatever goes to the tilth of me, it shall be you. You, my rich blood, your milky stream, pale strippings of my life. Breast that presses against other breasts, it shall be you. My brain, it shall be your occult convolutions. Can you imagine, my brothers and sisters, writing poetry like this in what really is still Victorian times? And what we have here is someone that says no to the doctrines of the day that made teachings holy from the churches, that made churches holy edifices, that made priests holier than the populace. He rejects that and says, no, I am that temple of the vastness of my soul, and I am that which is holy. And I continue a little bit further. I dote on myself. There is that lot of me, and all so luscious. Each moment, and whatever happens, thrills me with joy. I cannot tell how my ankles bend, nor whence the cause of my faintest wish, nor the cause of the friendship I emit, nor the cause of the friendship I take again. That I walk up my stoop, I pause to consider if it really be. A morning glory at my window satisfies me more than the metaphysics of books. To behold the daybreak. The little light fades the immense and diaphanous shadows. The air tastes good to my palate. What he is saying is that we cannot have a dynamic relationship with another until we have a dynamic relationship with our life. That it is through our senses that we are fed. That it is through our senses that the lusciousness of our own bodies, of our own spirits, reveal itself. We have so frequently in these classes that I have given to students, as well as the programs I have shared with the listeners, stressed praise, love, and gratitude. But praise, love, and gratitude may be the ascension attitudes, that which takes us to the immortality that is the lot of man. But I wanted to stress this, beloved listeners, that love, praise, and gratitude must begin with ourselves. And now, I wanted to have you take a look with me at this concept. My being is my sustenance. We look at our being as being this solitary body. Perhaps feel that it is lost in the vastness of space. We may choose others to conform to what we think we are, instead of helping us by challenging us to become more of what we can be. Our being is our sustenance. But that is because, in truth, our being is not this bundle of feelings and thoughts and this physical body, be it, however, the temple of our spirits. Our being is as vast as the cosmos, a super consciousness that's overlaid over everything that is. That is our true identity, and that is worthy of trusting. To trust ourselves, to explore ourselves in a never-ending quest for knowledge. The Toltec path that I have followed all of my life says there is no knowledge other than knowledge of the self. That is because we are all things. All energy, all power, all resources are yours. As soon as you fully realize you are as vast as the cosmos. Sometimes we think, but how can I be? I don't have all the answers. But perhaps we do. Having all the answers might simply mean that we know exactly what we need to, the minute we need to, and not a moment before. And even the mistakes of our life, were they really mistakes? My youngest daughter left my home at the age of 15 because of what I perceived to be mistakes I made. And I didn't visit my mother during the last 12 years of her life when she was stuck far away from where I live in an old age home and couldn't recognize me. I couldn't even call. She didn't know who I was, didn't want to hold the phone. If there are no mistakes, what about these? They seared my soul for a long time. But then I was told by one of the goddesses that my daughter would have entered into a disastrous marriage at the age of 16 if she hadn't left, and her life would have been vastly different. My mother left for the spirit world 12 years before the body died, and that apparently, unbeknownst to me, this is quite common in old people where life is lived as a reflex. In all major light promoters, all our mistakes are like that. We can accept ourselves and our mistakes. There is body knowledge to guide us. But when, according to our highest truth, we live and make a genuine mistake, it is never a mistake. Beloved ones, I ask now that you wait with us for a few minutes as we listen to some commercials, and then we will discuss this topic further. Thank you for being part of my light family. My love to you always.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Belvaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almine. To learn more about Almine and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
The foundation of all relationship. And a little bit later, beloved listeners, we are going to play you some music and ask you to have a pen and paper handy. Every other week, we ask you to do a little bit of self-work during our program to identify areas in which these teachings apply. We're going to ask you to write all the strong suits, all the beautiful qualities that you have as an individual and a human being. And we're going to ask you to make a list of those during the music towards the end of this segment. Now, I have asked a very dear friend of mine who we've had on the show earlier. She and her husband, Bert, have been frequent visitors on the show, and they're very close to me and very dear friends. They are both masters, and the Master Genie has offered to help me some of the most profound knowledge about self-love has come during conversations with some of the goddesses. And so I am going to ask her to assist me. I didn't want to convolute even a word of this. I wanted to read it exactly the way we received it from the goddesses, and I've asked her to give the answers, and I will ask the exact questions that I asked these goddesses during the time that this conversation took place. Thank you very much, Jeannie, for helping me with this. It's more effective when two people are relaying what took place between us.
You're very welcome.
So in my the question I asked the goddess was, and this is not the mother goddess, this is one of the goddesses, in my dealings with the goddess of form, why did she lie to me?
Because form lies, and you believe it.
Meaning that it deceives when we think it's real? I thought I'd gotten over that.
Then why do you pacify the unreal?
And this one I had to think a bit about, my listeners, but I said to her, do you mean that I care that my students learn as painlessly as possible, and I don't want them to become enraged or fearful because of the high frequencies they encounter in the work?
Denying them their pain is denying them the necessity to change. The classes during which you tend to the growth of the upper branches of the tree leave everyone feeling uplifted and great. All can feel the spirituality. But at times it's necessary to prod and unearth the stones of the stuck areas around their roots, which flushes up anger and pain, so they leave wondering if you are the right teacher. But to give your utmost for their enlightenment, you must do both. If the roots are not healthy and growing in proportion to the branches, strong winds can topple the tree. And yes, you are pacifying the unreal by being attached to the outcome.
For them, the unreal is the roles they play in physical life. The real part is indwelling life. Its evolution is all I should concern myself with. Is that right?
It is so that being real comes in degrees. Form that is not spiritualized, as, for instance, immortal matter would be, is like a hologram, totally unreal. An immortal master's body is matter filled with spirit, and therefore somewhat real. But the only real being in the cosmos is the Eternal Mother, the one expressing as the many.
How about the gods? Aren't they her counterparts?
They are her masculine components given spiritual form, so it can be said that they are as much her creations as we are. We are simply aspects of her, separated out, so she can examine the mysteries of her being through observing us.
So form's grip on our life is like an addiction. It has had this hold on us.
Exactly. As the light on earth has become more and more intense, life has put pressure on humanity to correct its blind spots. Mirrors of addiction in your environment have therefore increased.
I have wanted the increased light on earth to become visible, for signs of the cosmic ascension to be seen by the despairing masses. Is this a problem?
Only in that you tend to value the seen as more valuable than the unseen. And of course, there's the attachment to outcome.
Yes, I can see that.
Do you find the many friends of the unseen realms as fulfilling as the seen?
Well, it pains me that I can't always see them, and I so much want to hug them.
Ah, but you have many tangible interactions with them that you clearly see and touch with your energy body and remember.
It's not the same.
Then you do not value the experience of your energy body.
Now, beloved ones, this conversation that I had with the goddesses on May 12th, 2006, I wanted Jeannie and I to share with you because, you see, we are so attached to form in our self-love. We say, I will love myself when I've lost this much weight, or I will love myself when my bald spot is gone, or I'm not lovable because I'm this age or this weight or this skinny or, you know, look a certain way. The programming of these unreal mirrors from the outside affects self-love to a very, very large extent. Now, I had another conversation that is very much more pertinent to that better relationship with oneself on the same date with a different goddess, and it was also on May 12, 2006. And I said to her, I've been instructed to have a better relationship with myself. Can you help me identify all the areas of my life this pertains to? And she's then the one that said, the issues can be divided into self-love, self-worth, expressing your individuality, and self-interaction. And, you know, which one do we want to tackle first? Now, I suppose the core that should be in place, it was her answer, would be self-acceptance. If one doesn't have that, the others won't be there either. And she said to me, how about starting with the flaws? Most people just want to fix them, striving for perfection.
And perfection is?
Stagnation. If it's experienced for more than a few moments, it's the imbalance of life that creates movement and growth. It's like a timing mechanism. If a growth spurt is rapidly needed, great imbalance is created. This causes pain and discomfort in order to instill with us the desire to change.
Then you should welcome your flaws. Everyone has chosen flaws in the exact areas where they are needed in order to solve the individual's specific part of the mystery of existence. When they have done so, these flawed areas become their strengths.
So how about self-acceptance in the areas of our desires, the way we want life's conditions to be? Desires are frequently shunned as unholy or unspiritual, but without them we overpolarize into the light and stagnation occurs.
There also seems to be a great misunderstanding about the fact that accepting life's conditions and having desires for a different set of conditions aren't mutually exclusive. They are both important parts of self-acceptance.
So, if someone lives in a hut, but desires to live in a palace, he should first see the value of living the way he does in the hut, even though he desires to live in an entirely different way?
Yes. Change begins by accepting and seeing the value of what is. If acceptance of what is in front of you is not there, desires become needs. Find your life circumstances anyway, your higher self. Is it then that you don't trust yourself with your own well-being?
And this is a very good place for us to take a little break, beloved ones, because what I would like you to do is exactly what she said. She says that change begins by accepting what is and seeing the value of it. We have to see our own value, if there is any motivation in us to become more of what we are. And so I'm going to ask you, during the music that we will be playing, and all music in all my shows are music that it comes from an affair of the heart. And I'll give you the website to that because I think you're going to like it. It's www.almeneandpaul.com. And it's called An Affair of the Heart. Now, while we play this cut off of this CD for you, please make a list and truly be honest. Find the highest value and the most exquisite things about yourself. And at that point, change begins. So as she says, we designed our own life situations. Whatever we are, that too we designed. Accepting and appreciating the beginning point of change.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almeen's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Belvaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almeen's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almeen. To learn more about Almeen and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
So I continue with the assistance of the Master Genie to relay to you conversations that I've had with some of the goddesses. None of them are the goddess of creation, the mother of all, but they are nevertheless very high goddesses in the unseen realms that I have spoken to get information about a better relationship with self. And I asked, the Toltecs call it the madness in the dream, that we design our lives down to the last detail, and then when we live it, we feel victimized and oppose it every step of the way. And what about accepting our worthiness, such as our worthiness to receive or adorn ourselves, or our worthiness to be seen as sacred?
And the big one?
The worthiness to succeed at what we do?
Exactly. There are so many more areas, like the worthiness to spend time or money on yourself, the worthiness of being nurtured, but they all come down to one thing, the worthiness to claim your place in the sun and to live a fulfilled and happy life.
Well, what about believing that good things can come easily and we don't have to suffer to earn them? It feels to me that this issue of worthiness is somehow connected to seeing our own divinity.
Yes, accepting your divinity is definitely part of self-acceptance in the highest sense.
Well, perhaps we should start by saying, what is divine?
Perhaps you should rather ask, what is not? When the average person fails to see the divine in others, he feels guilty about seeing it only in himself, or feels that such holiness must surely set him apart from his fellow man.
But it is from seeing our divinity that we start to live sacredly, which benefits all life. When we live from this vantage point, we see ourselves as stewards of all life. We become conduits for cosmic power and love and light. So, what other areas of self-acceptance must we cultivate?
Accepting your unknown portions and your personality.
But where do we see our unknown portions, since by definition they're unknown?
You will see them mirrored in your fellow man. When you see something that amazes or takes you aback, look twice. It's there you will find yourself. You also find your unknown pieces when you stretch yourself beyond the boundaries of your comfort zones.
And so how about personalities?
Each is totally unique, like a specially colored lens through which each person shines his light. Unfortunately, people hold on to old habits, personal identities and social conditioning, and they call it their personalities. But a worldview produced by such baggage does not really have anything to do with personality. Personality is the special flavor you bring to your interaction with life. Because there's usually not enough self-love, many become what they think others want them to be. If you love yourself, what gift would you want to give yourself?
Fun?
Absolutely, yes. Something you should have a lot more of. Now I suppose you want me to define it. Well, even though it's not easily definable, you'll know when you experience it.
I have to think about this one.
No, you don't. But, okay, let's go on to other areas. You love being by yourself, so taking time for that and enjoying your own company, well, that's your great pleasure. The key is not in letting duty crowd it out.
We've spoken about accepting our own desires, but most don't even know what they are. I think taking time to listen to the desires of our hearts is really important.
Oh, yes, it is. And another thing I want to mention is how people are so hard on themselves for the mistakes they made. How do they think they're going to grow? Not making mistakes means one is functioning only within the known. Growth occurs by exploring the unknown.
So mistakes are necessary for growth. You're saying self-forgiveness is necessary for self-love.
Yes, yes, yes. And now there are two aspects of self-love left that I'd like you to think about. Self-nurturing and celebrating the self. Physical self-nurturing means you listen to the needs of your body. You rest when you need to. You take time for undisturbed self-care. You care about what you eat and drink. Too many eat mindlessly in front of the TV, not listening to the signals from the body that say when they've had enough, not really tasting their food, and not, certainly not, honoring the life forms that provided that food.
You know, this must be some cause for the obesity.
Oh, yes. In countries where mealtimes aren't observed around a shared table, people gain weight. They don't converse with others, slowing their rate of consumption. They ignore body signals. They fail to honor their food by tasting and chewing properly, so it may be thoroughly digested and truly nourish them. Consequently, they become nutritionally deficient as well as obese.
Now, what about self-celebration?
Well, if you take a little time each day to see yourself as the vastness you are, you will know you are all abundant, all luminous, that the body could be the experiential component of such expansion. It's magnificent indeed. Let it fill your heart with joy.
That is so beautiful.
And so are you. Now let's look at expressing individuality. Each of us is like an instrument playing its part in the cosmic symphony. If one instrument is out of tune, it detracts from the whole.
I would say a good starting place is to go through every programmed or preconceived label we have and throw it out the window. The truth of who we really are is so much greater than the boxes in which we've allowed ourselves to be placed and what we've been led to believe. To find the greatness within, we have to throw off those labels.
Oh, yes. But even without identity, as in your case, you still have to watch that you don't get caught in the web of others' expectations.
Isn't the key really to live in eternal time so that the guidance of one's heart can be heard in every moment?
Isn't that really the key to all things? If we look at self-interaction, one of the important concepts is sovereignty in relationship. This happens when you are constantly in touch with the inner personalities. This, in turn, is only possible if you stay in the moment.
I would imagine it's also a matter of being self-referring for approval. Again, the result of staying connected with our sub-personalities. If one is constantly burdened by the opinions of others, freedom of self-expression would be absent.
Self-reliance does take cultivation.
Well, you know, I'm not sure why you say that. Doesn't every overcoming require cultivation?
I mean that self-reliance, whether in the area of being able to express oneself, or that of financial independence, for example, has to be cultivated by throwing out dependencies on cultural belief systems or any kind of control that prevents us from fulfilling our destiny. Consider a family with several small children, a mother and father. The father may be the primary breadwinner. The mother may be a full-time mother. Perhaps there's barely enough money to cover everyone's needs, but the mother wishes to have financial independence.
How does she do this over time?
Her mindset has to correct at the starting point. She has to see herself living the way she would like to, by envisioning it joyfully every day as though it were a reality. Next, she has to put a foundation under her dreams. She may investigate a source of funding for continuous education for low-income housewives. She could trade play hours with another mother and become computer literate at the library so she could do research. She could study textbooks in the bathtub or in the park while the children play, etc., while waiting for grant money or while she saves enough for college courses.
So you're saying that by analyzing what it would take and by never giving up the vision, step by step she is slowly cultivating her self-reliance. It is her vision and moving towards it that has set her free, whether she has arrived or not. Now, we've already spoken about self-reliance and financial independence being important aspects of self-interaction. What sort of other things come into play?
Accountability and service, these are main items. Why don't you explain how these fit into the concept of self-interaction?
This is a tricky one.
Yes, it is.
It really has sort of to do with how we see ourselves, which is, of course, self-interaction.
You're on the right track. Go on.
Well, if we recognize ourselves as point of influence that ripples throughout the entire cosmos, every action becomes deliberate, and filled with power. If we realize that every action will either leave the cosmos a better place or not, we will want to live every moment in a way that is life-enhancing. Our lives then become lives of service. As we become aware that we affect all of existence through every choice, no matter how small, we finally become accountable for our actions.
You've got it. Well done.
Oh, thank you. Well,
let's take a little break and we'll be back right after this.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almaine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Belvaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almaine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almaine. To learn more about Almaine and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
So, we are in a discussion relaying an information that I received from one of the goddesses on self-love. Now, I just need to refer the listeners. In multiple of my books, we discuss the importance of the role of the four sub-personalities. In fact, in the book, Journey to the Heart of God, I describe it as the destiny of humankind to solve the inner family's relationships. The nurturer inside, the inner child, the inner warrior, the inner sage. To be able to have the self-regard, the self-love, the self-relationship that we seek, which is the foundation of all other relationships, I highly recommend that you take the time to study this. I would now like to continue with Jeannie's help. And she was saying that the secret to autonomy and successful relationships is the exact same one as the key to successful aloneness. In fact, she said, we can't have the one without the other. We have to be happy by ourselves before we can be happy with another. Now, when this transmission came from the goddess, I asked, how do we do that?
Well, the next issues are those of sovereignty and self-reliance in relationships with others and with the self.
Tell us a little more about that.
Well, that's your favorite topic, usually. The secret to autonomy in successful relationships is the exact same one as the key to successful aloneness. In fact, we can't have one without the other. We have to be happy by ourselves before we can be happy with another. And I know, how do we do that? Well, the key lies in having our inner subpersonalities happy, balanced, acknowledged, and expressing. The inner child comes to the business meeting. The inner nurturer parents the child. The inner sage guides and counsels, and the warrior guards our boundaries and our impeccability. We also don't approach relationships with emotional need, and so they have a chance to succeed.
Well, how does having a willingness to receive fit in with self interaction? Let me see. We have to approach it from our highest identity. As an individuated awareness or a unique perspective filling all that is, if we approach it from this perspective, it is simply giving to ourself through another. It is life giving unto itself. To overburden another with any guilt of receiving or alternatively, any feelings of obligation is to receive from separatism rather than inclusion. Now, my beautiful listeners, I have one more conversation that I later had with the goddess of the direction of below. And what I was speaking about is the instinctual nature, which is governed by the direction of below. There's a vital piece missing in all people that do not allow this, these instinctual portions of themselves to come forward. I asked her, is there a flaw in my perception of living the wild woman instinctual nature? Recently, I've had a lot of mirrors in my environment showing instincts that are out of control.
You've also been working on inclusiveness in all areas of your life. How do you think that applies in the case of allowing your wild woman, to express?
Well, the wild woman nature has been very much viewed with apprehension by all around me. Inclusiveness would, of course, demand we express without the slightest regard for what others think of us. But, you know, I sense there's something missing.
You already know that high mind must guide the instinctual. But the key problem area in your life is that you express it in boxes. In other words, you let it out only when you think it's appropriate.
I don't understand. Are you saying I must live it all the time, even when I'm, for example, in a business meeting?
Well, the instinctual nature must indeed be a constant guide in your life. It invigorates, it removes ruts, and brings new possibilities to every moment. It should be your constant companion, a must. A must is the higher mind.
I imagine that's because the above and the below have folded into the direction of within. They're not lived separately anymore, but are included within. But the four directions have folded in too. I mean, what are the ramifications of that? And just to explain to our listeners, while I was asking that question is at that time, space and time collapsed, and the directions folded in cosmically into the direction of within. And I was sensing that the inclusiveness comes from that direction of within, and that's where I had my perceptional flaw. So that's where that question came from. And the answer was?
You've been teaching of the four directions and the subpersonalities they represent. You've also been teaching how one must take time to listen to them and express them. How do you think this has changed?
Yes, I see. Amazing. In other words, no more taking time out for them. They should be expressing all the time. In the business meeting, the child's innocence, enthusiasm, and curiosity about his world should be present. The inner nurturer should express the need for water, for a different temperature, for a break. I suppose it's impossible to take boxes of time for different personalities to express when there is no more time, only the eternal now in which they can express. In what other areas do I not understand inclusiveness?
Growth. You still think you must become something or grow to something. All you have to know is that you are all things, and I'm going to say it again, you are all things.
Yes, but clearly there are still things I'm learning. Isn't that a form of becoming?
Well, think of it rather as already being those things and then just bringing them online. You can also think of standing in the middle of a landscape, but only looking at certain portions of it at a time.
In other words, my brothers and sisters, to explain what it is she has just said, we see ourselves as little schisms of the whole. Just because at a certain time the light of our flashlight of existence is shining on a specific little portion of the ceiling. But we're not just that portion. We are all portions. I had a conversation with the goddess of below on April the 1st, 2006. And I said to her, the great divinity that hides in the human body is amazing. How can we show it greater respect? She said to me, it dishonors the inner divinity when you make yourself appear less in order to make another feel better about themselves. That also applies when you dishonor your body's needs. Eating on the run, denying the sub-personalities, such as permitting the inner child to express itself. I cannot stress to you enough the importance of incorporating within our daily living these sub-personalities, and I urge you to study them. It has been a great, great joy to share with you today, and next week we will discuss the power of silence, for it is in the silence that all knowledge and all power exists. Thank you so much for all the times that you have joined us on the many shows that we have had so far, and it is you that makes this possible. Thank you to my listeners. My love to you always.
We hope you have enjoyed today's show, Walking Between the Worlds with Al Mean.